Dorian gains strength in the Atlantic as it heads toward Florida and the Bahamas. Plus, Hong Kong enters its 13th weekend of unrest, and bankruptcies are rising in the U.S. energy sector.
A lot of the oil and gas companies that are having trouble right now are smaller public producers and private producers. A number of them took on a large amount of debt in recent years that they are now having trouble servicing.
This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Before we get to bankruptcies in the energy sector, here are some other top stories we're following. Dorian had strengthened into a Category 3 storm by Friday afternoon and is expected to grow stronger as it heads toward the Bahamas and Florida. The entire state of Florida is under a state of emergency. Governor Ron DeSantis is urging residents to make sure they're prepared.
The bad news of the storm going slower is that that could potentially have some negative impacts once it reaches landfall. But you do have time before it reaches to prepare if you have not done so. And so we urge all Floridians to have 7 days worth of food, medicine, and water. This is potentially a multi-day event where it will churn slowly across the state.
DeSantis says residents should heed the advice of local officials and be prepared for power outages and flooding. Dorian's path has been difficult for forecasters to predict, but the latest projections say the storm is likely to make landfall in central or southern Florida as early as Monday afternoon. To follow the latest path of the storm, you can use our hurricane tracker online at WSJ.com. Hong Kong is entering its 13th weekend of unrest following the police ban of a planned rally and the arrest of several protest organizers on Friday. The Wall Street Journal's Natasha Khan says that's setting the stage for an unpredictable and potentially volatile weekend.
Organizers of some of the biggest protests in the past few months had applied to organize another mass rally and march on Saturday, which was effectively banned by the police, who issued a letter of objection. So that's expected to actually drive more people out on the streets. And again, because there's no approved rally route, it's going to be quite unpredictable. And today, there's been a number of arrests of prominent figures of the opposition movement, including Joshua Wong, who is a prominent pro-democracy figure here in Hong Kong. And all of that is increasing the tensions here because people are saying that, you know, the government is really trying to crack down on the protest movement and expected to really ratchet up tensions here this weekend.
Protests in Hong Kong began about 3 months ago over an extradition bill that's since been suspended.
It's never been fully withdrawn, and that's still the key demand of a lot of the protesters that are coming out asking for the government to fully withdraw this bill. Separately, many people are not satisfied or they're very angry at how police have handled the protests in the last few weeks. So they're asking for an independent inquiry into how the police have handled the situation. There's a few other demands, including a removal of a designation of a June 12th protest being a riot, because a riot carries heavier sentences if people are found to be guilty of rioting. And also another point is actually to ask for universal suffrage. So genuine democracy is another thing that everybody has been marching for.
Protests had been relatively calm in recent weeks, but police in Hong Kong deployed water cannons for the first time on Sunday after pro-democracy protests turned violent. Ohio's Attorney General Dave Yost is seeking to delay a landmark opioid trial set to begin in October. He argues that only the state, not counties, can bring cases on behalf of the general public. In a filing on Friday, Yost argued that allowing two counties to bring the case to trial, quote, would fragment the state's claims, pose a high risk of inconsistent verdicts, result in duplicative or overlapping damages, and misallocate funds in the state. Yost and other state attorneys general are involved in settlement talks over the opioid crisis with Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin. The first opioid case to go to trial in Oklahoma ended with a $572 million verdict on Monday against Johnson & Johnson, which the company has said it will appeal. President Trump says his trade policies aren't having a negative impact on the U.S. economy. Instead, in a tweet on Friday, he blamed, quote, badly run and weak companies, and repeated his calls for the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates. The comments come ahead of the latest round of tariffs between the U.S. and China, which, as of Friday, were set to take effect on Sunday. U.S. consumers spent more in July, marking a pickup from the previous 2 months. Personal consumption expenditures rose a seasonally adjusted 0.6% from June, according to the U.S. Commerce Department. The numbers mark a bright spot for the economy amid headwinds, including slower factory activity and slowing global growth. But the picture for the months ahead is less certain. Consumer sentiment fell in August, a decline the University of Michigan attributes to ongoing uncertainty over tariffs. The number of oil and gas bankruptcies in the U.S. is rising as smaller drillers struggle to pay off their debt and investors express growing concerns about shale production. Joining me now via Skype from Houston with more details is Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Elliott. Rebecca, how much are we seeing bankruptcies rise, and are they hitting any particular regions harder than others?
What we're seeing so far is that bankruptcies in the oil patch in the U.S. are ticking up. We've seen 26 of them so far in 2019, and that's as of August. And this is nowhere near the pace of bankruptcies that we saw after the oil price crash in 2016, but still kind of notable because oil prices have been relatively stable in recent months. And so it's really reflective of a lot of the investor dissatisfaction with oil company performance.
And part of the reason for this has to do with the money drillers are spending up front. Can you tell us a little bit more about the factors behind the rise in bankruptcies among gas and oil companies?
A lot of the oil and gas companies that are having trouble right now are smaller public producers and private producers. A number of them took on a large amount of debt in recent years that they are now having trouble servicing. And in some cases, the companies in bankruptcy filings have said that they had assumed that oil prices would be higher than they are right now. In others, they had trouble with midstream infrastructure obligations. So there are a variety of factors that are dependent on the bankruptcy, but broadly speaking, this is kind of an issue with companies taking on large amounts of debt.
How is all of this likely to impact U.S. shale production and the oil and gas markets?
So smaller producers and private companies make up about 30% of the oil production in the lower 48 states, and that's according to RS Energy, a consulting group. And so there's this kind of question of what the impacts to production will be that we should be looking out for. There's also, you know, as more of these companies go through bankruptcy, what happens with their assets, the extent to which they may have to do kind of a fire sale at the end of the bankruptcy process. I think those are all questions to keep an eye out for.
Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Elliott, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And finally, as we head into Labor Day weekend, we're also heading into the final days of the massive Burning Man gathering in Nevada. Our reporter Katie Binley dug into a debate in San Francisco, just one of the many locations so-called burners travel from to get to the 9-day event.
In San Francisco, there's basically like an ongoing debate about whether or not the city kind of empties out during Burning Man, which is when all these people go to Nevada, to the desert, to a temporary city and look at art installations and there's music and a lot of people get naked and stuff. And so there's a sense in the city of, oh, you know, all the burners are gone. So the city's like empty this week and you can get, you know, tables at restaurants that are hard to get into and there's no lines at all the places that always have lines. But there's sort of another cohort that thinks that this is like a myth and that the city's not actually empty during Burning Man, because San Francisco is a city of like 880 something thousand people, and something like 70,000 people go to Burning Man, and almost half of them are from California, but not all from San Francisco. So it's kind of an ongoing debate.
The debate has us wondering, what do you do when your town empties out for the holidays? You can share your thoughts by tweeting us at WSJ Podcasts. And that's what's news for this Friday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.